Okay. So, do you have an anecdote or personal story that you would like to share related to your work on radiation events in Russia, Ukraine, or Kazakhstan?
Yes, as you alluded to, I've been to a number of different countries in the former Soviet Union, including Russia. And I think the most striking anecdote I can give you is when we were visiting the hospital of patients that were hospitalized after Chernobyl, back when that happened in 1980, I believe, or in the 80s. And I saw very sick patients who were suffering from radiation injury that had been hospitalized, some of them for years. And I asked, they were called liquidators, meaning they went in to clean up the mess after the explosion, many of whom died within days or weeks of the initial cleanup, the ones that got the highest dosage, but some that got less of a dosage just had a chronic radiation sickness. And I asked the gentleman through a translator, I said, what made you do it? Why did you risk your life like that? And he looked at me with a very puzzled expression on his face. He said, it was my duty. He never even questioned whether or not he would partake in that and respond to the crisis. So I thought that was very touching.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much for that anecdote. So the second question I have for you is, do you believe that the U.S. healthcare system exposes patients to excessive levels of radiation, and why or why not?
Well, with the expansion of new technologies and radiation, I think there's an opportunity to have more radiation exposure. There are a variety of nuclear scans, for example, cardiac scans, CT scans, computed tomography is what it stands for. And many times these are done repetitively throughout life. Once somebody's been diagnosed with an advanced cancer, it's a trivial amount of radiation exposure. But over a period of a lifetime, if you have these scans for minor complaints, that radiation dosage can build up. Now, that being said, there are a number of new, and I'm not a radiologist, by the way, but there are a number of new technologies where, with the use of software, the radiation dosage can be reduced. So there are these low radiation CT scanners, but not all medical facilities have that. Particularly the scanners that are a bit older still deliver a dose which is maybe, you know, at least a couple of times, and I'm not familiar with exactly how much more than these new scanners.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you so much. So were there differences in diagnostic equipment you saw in Kazakhstan or the Ukraine versus the US? And were there differences in sentiments towards radiation between the different populations that you interacted with?
Well, when we were there in the mid 1990s, it was very primitive. I mean, the hospital was in complete disrepair. There would be missing floor tiles, and it was absolutely awful at that point in time because of the collapse of the former Soviet Union. But and the laboratory as well, the clinical laboratories that I visited, they were using test tubes that were broken, you know, chipped at the top and so forth. They had trouble getting reagents for the instruments. So it was really, but at that, saying all that, dedication of the medical professionals was outstanding. And they were all very much committed to taking care of their patients and doing the best they could with limited circumstances.
Yeah, for sure. So do you think there were differences in kind of the way that people, or the attitudes that people had towards radiation in the different places that you visited?
I think most people, of course, in the Soviet times, most people were unaware of radiation exposure. The city that we had an affiliation with, if you will, through the USAID that we were representing in this affiliation, was Semipalatinsk, and that was a two-hour bus ride from Kurchatov, which was the nuclear testing site in the former Soviet Union. So there was a lot of back when the testing was above ground, there was a lot of exposure of the population of that area to radiation. Now, that being said, Kazakhstan was generally speaking relatively barren with not many people per square mile. But that being stated, Semipalatinsk was, I don't know how many people were there, maybe 100,000, 200,000 or 300,000. So I can remember some of them telling me that in former times they were told 8 o'clock Sunday morning, there's going to be an earthquake. Please stay indoors. So because of the nuclear testing. And some of them reported that they could actually see the nuclear mushroom clouds, in the distance. So I don't think at that time there was, and maybe generally speaking, even in America at that time, testing was done. You've all seen the films of the soldiers that were assembled together to watch a nuclear explosion or a nuclear detonation rather. So I didn't see that they were overly concerned. That the people that I was dealing with, this had happened in the remote past, and there was no ongoing exposure that I could detect. That being stated, there was a lake nearby Kurchatov where I think one of the nuclear detonations actually sort of rerouted the river, and the river filled up a basin of a former nuclear test site. And there were still nuclear or radioactive material in that. And it was called the Radioactive Lake. So they knew to avoid certain things like that. And plus it was, sort of out in the middle of nowhere. So it wasn't something you would encounter on a going about your day-to-day business.
Yeah, for sure. So in Kazakhstan or Ukraine, how did you combat some of the concerns or fears related to thyroid cancer and associated levels of radioactive iodine?
Well, when Chernobyl happened, the radioactive cloud actually moved to the north. For example, it was 20, 30, 40 miles north of Chernobyl, which was a very large city, was this complex of three nuclear reactors, one of which detonated and released all of the radioactivity. That all went north and really contaminated areas of Belarus, just north of there, and also parts of Poland and Northern Europe. It was following that, looking at those, particularly children, there was a rather dramatic increase in thyroid cancer in those children. And some of those cancers, as I recall, were a bit more aggressive than what we normally see with these low-grade thyroid cancer. But I didn't visit those regions particularly, so there was not that concern.
Yeah, for sure. I guess like in relation to Belarus then and Poland and things, do you believe that there was a strong correlation, or did you see a strong correlation between levels of radioactive iodine and thyroid cancer?
Yes, I mean, there's no question about it. Scientifically, it showed a significant increase in thyroid cancer, particularly in young patients who were most vulnerable. Because as you may recall, or at least if you've read about it, you probably weren't born then, the government kept it under wraps for some time about the nuclear accident. And so the people that were in exposed areas were not taking precautions. And so the exposure was much more than it would have been had a real timely alert gone out about the danger of the radioactive cloud and to take measures to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So how are you able to differentiate between thyroid cancer caused by radioactive iodine versus thyroid cancer or thyroid disease caused by other just unrelated factors?
Well, most of the time when cancers form, there are a variety of causes, environmental carcinogens, sometimes a germline mutation that happens in the patient's family and in that particular patient, and sometimes things like radiation. Usually we can't really tell what the initial or what the initiating cause was based upon just studying the cancer itself. I believe that there were some changes, however, and I haven't reviewed this lately, in the thyroid cancers as a result of Chernobyl, in terms of more of one type of mutation than was ordinarily seen in the non-exposed population, but I'd have to research that.
Okay, yeah, perfect. So based on your interactions with the people who had been exposed to radiation, what do you think like the public should know about the harmful or the beneficial effects of radiation?
Well, the beneficial effects of radiation are the fact that you can make accurate diagnoses, very timely and save one's life if it's looking for a small cancer that hasn't been manifest by other means yet. So on balance, our use of radiation to advance medical care is a strong positive for the patient's health. But that being stated, if you can avoid the radiation, it's probably best to do so. If an MRI scan, which does not use radiation, will give you just as much information as a CT scan, it's probably best to opt for the non-radiation approach. Or if an ultrasound can give you the same information, use that rather than a CT scan.
Yeah. So do you think that low dose radiation could have a harmful effect on health in general?
Well, first of all, we're all exposed to low dose radiation.
Yeah, sure.
From outer space, the cosmic rays, and there's the background exposure that we all have. Most things that cause cancer have a certain threshold that have to be met before you actually see an increase. And so the question is there a threshold for radiation-induced carcinogenesis, or does every little bit of increment result in a tiny increment in the incidence of cancer? And I don't think anyone knows for sure about that. But certainly your incidence, once you do have a proven increase in incidence in cancer as it relates to the history of radiation exposure, is usually radiation exposure that's given to actually treat a cancer rather than just some diagnostic x-rays. For example, somebody that has prostate cancer treated with radiation, later in life, which they're usually older to begin with, so they don't live all that much longer, even if the cancer is successfully cured, have a very small increase in the incidence of subsequent cancer compared to those people that have not been treated with radiation, like of the order of less than 1%, so 1%.
Interesting, yeah. So if you've ever recommended radiation treatments to patients, how have they generally responded to the term radiation? Is there a lot of like fear surrounding that word? Do you think patients are very like fearful of radiation, or most very willing and recognize the benefits of it?
Well, I think people, as you get older, it's less of an issue. Your event horizon to actually develop a cancer on the basis of getting radiation, there's not nearly as much concern. However, you take a young woman that has never had a child yet, and she's interested in childbearing, and let's say she has an overactive thyroid called Graves' disease that can be treated successfully with radioactive iodine. To ablate the thyroid, to get rid of the hyperthyroidism. But it can also be treated by surgery, which would obviously not have radiation. So some of those patients say, I really don't want to get radiation, expose my body to that at my relatively young age. Let's say they're in their early 20s or something, mid-20s. So that's the only time I've actually, of course, I don't take care of patients as a pathologist directly. But that's the only situation I can recall where there's really a serious consideration by the patient of using some other form of treatment.
No, yeah, that definitely makes sense. So in general, I guess this is more of a personal just curiosity. are there different radiation doses, and upon what criteria do you recommend the strength of dosage or exposure?
So, well, there's all different types of radiation. There's radiation that comes from radioactive pharmaceuticals, which can be beta emitters, gamma emitters, and so forth. And then X-rays, of course, with an X-ray machine as a specific type of electromagnetic spectrum. There's also recently developed, I would say recently in the last decade or so, at least in clinical use, would be proton therapy, where you're using protons rather than electrons of radiation. I mean, rather than X radiation.
Yeah, that makes sense. So is there like a threshold or a certain value that people do not exceed, I guess, when it comes to radiation? Or is there kind of a line that you can cross depending on how aggressive the cancer is?
Right. Well, certain cancers can be treated by low dose radiation, cancers that are very sensitive. But most cancers require a significant dose of radiation, which it far exceeds what you would get even in a lifetime of diagnostic X-rays. So I think when people have cancer that needs to be treated, the last thing that's on their mind is the potential for the radiation to do something to them when they're trying to struggle and survive the present cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, so those were kind of all the questions I had for you. Is there anything else that you would like to add related to your experiences or radiation in general and the effects that can have on health?
No, I think, but I do think that people nowadays are much more aware of diet, other types of environmental things that affect oneself, and of course, radiation falls into that category. And it's always best to minimize radiation exposure, but not to the extent that it may compromise a diagnostic procedure or the treatment of a cancer that you're struggling with at present. So, radiation can, it's like fire. Radiation can be a good friend or it can be a big enemy. So just, you wouldn't ban fire just because occasional kitchens catch on fire and burn down a house, right? So you have to look at your own situation and your risk tolerance and what effect it will have or might have on your health in the future, and make your own decision with that of your advising healthcare provider, your physician.
Yeah, for sure. Perfect. Well, thank you so much again for your time. I know we had to reschedule a couple times, but thank you so much again for your time. I really appreciate your participation.